This is the NBC Saturday Night News, brought to you by Exxon. Tonight, March 31st, reported by Gary Cutley.
Good evening. The American military withdrawal from South Vietnam ended today with the departure of the last U.S. members of the Joint Military Commission. We'll have that story. We'll also hear from a civilian who spent 8 years, torturous years, as prisoner of the communists. We begin, though, not with Vietnam, but with a major dilemma here in this country. And that, of course, is the cost of eating. Today was shopping day for many Americans, and supermarkets across the country were full on the eve of a week-long meat boycott. And that boycott is going ahead despite the president's decision to put a ceiling on meat prices. The housewives organizing the boycott said today the price ceiling is nice, but it's too late. Meat prices are already too high, and they should come down. And the women are ready for action.
Next week, we have to cooperate and not eat meat all week, okay?
The meat boycott is still on. Members of FIT, that's Fight Inflation Together, are roaming around Los Angeles handing out meatless menus for people to follow all of next week. Leaders of the boycott hope all this meat will remain on the counters tomorrow through next Saturday. They say President Nixon's price ceiling is just not enough.
I think he should have put the ceiling on prices that were perhaps in December or November, because he just went back 30 days retroactively for the price ceiling. This is why we started our organization, because even the 1st of March, it was the retail prices were so exorbitant that that's why we started out to accomplish what we did with consumer pressure. So just having a ceiling back to the 1st of March, to me, is fairly ludicrous, really.
The United Auto Workers Union has asked its members to observe the boycott, and at least one hospital here says it will serve no meat in its cafeteria and will ask its patients not to eat any meat all week. Don Oliver, NBC News, Los Angeles.
In Washington, it was a rainy day, and boycott rallies were sparsely attended. The organizers thought up gimmicks to spotlight the idea of 7 days without meat. They offered empty hamburger buns. They prepared a giant submarine sandwich without meat. And to dramatize the high cost of meat, they had an armored car deliver a single sirloin steak as a gift for the Nixons.
We think the president shouldn't have to suffer all week. He said he was going to eat chicken, and chicken's pretty expensive, too, so we'll give him this.
Some of the demonstrators vowed to continue the boycott beyond April 7th, and indeed until meat prices come down again. But in Washington supermarkets on the day before the boycott, it was a busy Saturday. Everything was selling well, including meat. Alvin Rosenfeld, NBC News, Washington.
One of the problems, frankly, facing the organizers of the meat boycott is that Americans like to eat meat. The result is that the meat boycott itself may be successful at the supermarket, but that does not mean that people will stop eating meat at home, meat that they bought in advance and then kept in their freezers. We'll have more on the food story and the political problems it causes President Nixon in a moment.
Off the coast of Louisiana, where people's livelihoods depend on shrimp. More than 20 years ago, shrimpers thought they were seeing the end of an era and a way of life. They were concerned because oil drilling had just begun offshore. Shrimp are one of the most delicate marine creatures. And despite our assurances that the shrimp industry and oil industry could live together in harmony, few fishermen believed it. Now, the wells are here by the thousands. And the shrimp are still here by the millions. Exxon doesn't claim credit for the good shrimping, but we don't seem to have done it any harm. Exxon, we'd like you to know.
President Nixon is in San Clemente, California, and today the White House staff considered a presidential visit to a supermarket to talk to shoppers there, but the idea was turned down. Mr. Nixon's concern about meat prices was evident this week with his decision to put a ceiling on meat prices. It was also evident last night when he arrived in California. And at the airport, he told people the White House is concerned about the cost of food, and he promised his aides would keep a close watch on stores near San Clemente.
I hope they anything happens. Well, they aren't going up at least today. Yeah. Well, I'll have my people go over to Alpha Beta and see what happens. I'll have them watch it all week long. No, they'll always cooperate, and I think the other markets will too. They want to keep them down, you know, but when the stuff from the market comes up. But we want to keep those prices down. But if you understand, that's a ceiling. We want them to come down too, right?
Well, the price ceiling on meat has not been directly applied against the farmer himself, but rather against the middlemen, all those other people who handle the meat between the farm and the dinner table, each of whom gets his bit of the action and the profits. Today, Earl Butz, the Secretary of Agriculture, talked about the decision to put the ceiling on the middleman rather than on the farmer, and here's what he said.
But the president put this ceiling on, I think it was a wise thing. It was wise he did not put it on at the farm level. For if you had put a ceiling on at the farm level, it would have been counterproductive and would have been a signal to our farmers to liquidate livestock rather than to increase livestock. They operate just exactly like any of the rest of us. And our job now is to increase output. And you increase output by making it pay in this American system. I don't know any other way to get the signal through. Because our farmers are like anybody else. You can't tell me that an Iowa farmer messes around this morning in a muddy feedlot in the middle of Iowa because he loves the steers. I don't think he's that queer. He's out there because he hopes to make a little money. It's just that simple. And that's the way the American system operates, and I think it's been operating pretty well. But why do we have a so-called high cost of food? Even right now, the farmer gets 43 cents of the consumer's food dollar. Somebody else takes 57 cents. Now, we've been chasing that 43-cent rabbit a long while. I wish we'd chase the 57-cent rabbit a while.
These days, the farmer can't really be blamed for feeling that he's the bottom man on the totem pole. And he is there because farmers make up only 6% of the American population. 6%. And as the number of farmers has shrunk, so has their political muscle. But they have not lost their voice, and farm organizations have loudly criticized the meat price ceiling. One of them is the National Farmers Organization. Earlier this week, it told its members not to sell their cattle and other livestock in an effort to drive prices up even more. And last night, NFO members met in Des Moines.
More than 600 members of the National Farmers Organization met in Des Moines to decide how to keep their profits from falling. Before voting on three proposed strategies, they heard a fiery address from NFO President Orrin Lee Staley.
The farmers own the pork first. They own the hogs. They own the beef first because they own the cattle. And whenever the farmers of this nation unite, as they have in the last 2 days, and decide they're going to price their products, they'll get their price. And don't ever forget it. I was astounded that George Meany, of all people in this country, to call upon another group to have their prices beaten down was George Meany. If he really means it, he can tell the butchers' union, lower your wages 25% in 7 days, like the farmers' price is right now.
Staley told the farmers they had three choices: continue withholding their livestock from the market, resume normal marketing, or call off the withholding action until they see what happens to the market on Monday and Tuesday. The men voted to wait and see.
All in favor of that, make a note of the uplifted right hands. Stand. Opposed likewise.
NFO members in other areas also voted overwhelmingly to take the same action. More meetings are scheduled for Monday night, And it's almost certain the NFO will resume its withholding strategy if cattle and hog prices drop substantially on Monday. John Palmer, NBC News.
With food prices where they are these days, most people, of course, are looking for a bargain. Last week, we showed how people in Florida can pick vegetables in a field at a considerable saving. Today, shoppers in New York had their own bargain. They could buy food wholesale in a warehouse. And here's what it looked like.
The prospect of saving on food was enough to line shoppers up in front of the food warehouse 2 hours before it opened. Some had come from other parts of New York City, some even from the suburbs. Inside, employees prepared for the once-a-week onslaught. At 8 a.m., customers were issued price lists, shopping carts, and just let go with a little verbal encouragement.
We hope you will take advantage of our fabulous values that we are offering you today. We hope you will stock up on any item that you will see.
This is the third Saturday Zeitzer Food Corporation has opened its doors direct to the general public as a wholesaler. Since the company's weekday business, selling food to institutions and steamship companies, pays the bills, the Saturday retail trade is practically all gravy. And with a minimum of frills and a maximum of organization, Zeitzer claims to save shoppers no less than 25% of average retail food prices.
We buy many of our items car lot. As a result, as we know in elementary economics, if you buy right, you'll sell right. And if you buy in volume, you can sell cheaper. And the ultimate saver is the consumer.
Mrs. Josephine Rogozik says $50 doesn't stretch very far with a family of four these days, and she decided to try the food warehouse. Her purchases ranged from steak to fruits and frozen vegetables, and her verdict was favorable.
All right, let's have the good news.
39.34.
Very good. And the supermarket's very bad, very high. But here I did very well. With meat, potatoes, 20 cents a packet, a 5 pound bag cheaper.
You'd come back, huh? You think this is a good idea?
Yes. Maybe today again, too, if I can get some more money from my husband.
The Zeitzers say all this has exceeded their wildest expectations, and the customers seem happy. It sounds like the sort of thing which supermarkets or somebody would object to, but so far they haven't. And the city and the Federal Trade Commission are apparently encouraging what's happening here. So the idea could spread. Ken Alford, NBC News, New York.
And so there's an awful lot of talk and considerable action about food and what it costs these days. Some people complaining of the high prices, others taking advantage of them. In all, people have not been so worked up over a problem since the worst days of the Vietnam War. And we'll have today's Vietnam story in a moment.
America is moving by land and sea and air. And no matter how you're moving, you know that we'll be there to help you do the things you love, to help you find your way. Exxon keeps you moving across the USA. Don't you know that Exxon keeps things moving, moving right across the USA? Gonna see that Exxon makes it easier to get around today.
Dockside gasoline, products for commercial, business, and private aircraft. Car care centers with products and repair services you need for your car. And thousands of stations across the land. That's how Exxon keeps things moving.
Don't you know that Exxon keeps things moving? Moving right across the USA.
American military strength in South Vietnam today is 223 men, all that are allowed to remain after the U.S. withdrawal. The men will be used to guard or work in the American embassy and to try and locate missing U.S. servicemen in South Vietnam. The servicemen in Saigon won't feel alone. There are still about 8,000 American civilians in South Vietnam. They'll be working for the U.S. government or for private contractors to help the South Vietnamese. Today, the last group of American military men scheduled to leave South Vietnam did. They were members of the Joint Military Commission. And the North Vietnamese members of that commission also flew out to Hanoi. It's now up to the Saigon government and to the Viet Cong to work out their political future and their military disputes, which continue. And today, South Vietnam's President Thieu left Saigon for the United States and a meeting with President Nixon. Bob Jones reports.
It was the largest,
the noisiest, and certainly the most well-orchestrated send-off ever accorded to you during his presidency.
Huey left on his round-the-world trip after an intensive week of political house-cleaning. He had attended Farmers' Day ceremonies in the Mekong Delta and taken control of the country's largest political party and fired three province chiefs. The South Vietnamese president is taking along his wife, the ministers of economy, finance, and foreign affairs, the chief of the general staff, former ambassador to Washington, Huy Diem, and his personal aide and press chief. After a 24-hour stopover in Honolulu, Chu flies to San Clemente for 2 days of talks with President Nixon. His aides expect those sessions to be very cordial, but they are less certain about the reception Chu will get next week from the U.S. Congress in Washington. Bob Jones, NBC News, Saigon.
More released prisoners of war arrived back in the United States today, among them a civilian, Ernest Brace, who was captured in Laos in 1965. Like many men captured in the early days of the war, he was especially harshly treated, and he talked about that today when he set foot back in the United States. Roy Neal was there.
There were 18 men aboard the plane that arrived today at Travis. Ernest Brace, a civilian, was one of them. He was the first returning prisoner of war to describe at plainside the treatment he had received. He denied that he had ever been a CIA agent, but said the communists in Laos thought he was, so they tortured him. He escaped several times, but was recaptured and tortured some more.
When they recaptured me that time, they brought me back. They had a foxhole that they used that the guard who sat and watched my cage would jump into whenever aircraft came over. They told me to get down into the hole. I thought at first they were going to cover it with bamboo and spread dirt over the top of it and just leave me in a hole, sitting in a hole. But they told me to stand up. My head was above the level of hole, up to about just below my chin. And then they started shoveling dirt in. As they shoveled it in, I started wiggling around a little bit. The officer struck me several times with his bamboo cane. I stood still, and they started kept shoveling dirt in. Inadvertently, I leaned forward a little bit as it was coming in. I got more dirt in behind me than I did in front of me. So after the dirt was in there, I was more or less leaning on my chest on the dirt. But I was able to flex my hands and my elbows somewhat because after they got them covered in the loose dirt, I kept moving them around. At first, I thought they were going to leave me in this hole about 24 hours. They didn't. They left me in that hole for 7 days.
NBC News correspondent Liz Trotta was in Hanoi for the release of the last group of POWs earlier this week. Here is the last of three reports she filmed while she was there. This one deals with some of the aspects of life today in North Vietnam.
Like all the countries involved in the war, North Vietnam, too, has paid a high price. Her men and resources were severely drained by the fighting in the south, and finally, her capital city was bombarded by air.
Life is very Spartan in Hanoi. A combination of war and the communist system have made it so. The wide boulevards are clogged with bicycles and ciclos. There are few cars and there are no taxis. Food is scarce. North Vietnamese people eat a lot of vegetables and noodles because most foods are rationed. In order to buy meat, fish, or sugar, one must have money and a coupon. A laborer is entitled to only a pound or 2 pounds of meat per month, according to the supply. Stores are usually open from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. There are few goods on display, and most of them can't be purchased anyway. At counters where cotton or soap are sold, people crowd around eagerly and sometimes chaotically. The clothing worn by the North Vietnamese is usually old and drab. Here on Hung Dao Street, brightly colored children's clothes are on display, but most children one sees in Hanoi are not wearing new clothes. This particular area is devoted to what the North Vietnamese call private enterprise shops. In other words, not run by the state. Most people work 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. Despite the deprivation and the sacrifices made for the war against the South, the North Vietnamese people have gone on with their daily lives as best they can. What seems to sustain many of them is what they have been told by their leaders, that the war against the Americans is over and the victory was theirs. This is Liz Trotta, NBC News.
This five-man advance group from the State Department, headed by China expert Alfred Jenkins, left Washington today for Peking. There, they'll set up the American liaison mission in China, an embassy in everything but name. It'll open up in May. A Chinese mission will open up in Washington at about the same time.
In 1929, Exxon's affiliate, Largo Oil, built a refinery on Aruba in the Caribbean. It was a relatively simple affair. It made crude oil into heating oil, gasoline, and a few other products. Today, things aren't so simple. To keep up with America's enormous demand for energy, the Largo refinery makes hundreds of products. So there's many times the complexity. To control this incredible maze, something new was needed. This is it. An electric pencil that writes with light on a cathode ray tube. By pointing it at the right valve or pump on a diagram, a man can control the flow of oil throughout the giant refinery. A giant, yes, but no bigger than a man. Exxon, we'd like you to know.
Government representatives and militant Indians today resumed talks to try once again to end the Indian occupation at Wounded Knee, South Dakota. That occupation is now in its fifth week. Today's negotiations were the first in 13 days, and John Dancy has a report on that.
The meeting took place in a teepee in the demilitarized zone just outside Wounded Knee. Newsmen were kept 800 yards away from the meeting site. The session lasted 2 hours and 15 minutes, and both sides said they were pleased with it. Another session was scheduled for tomorrow. The Indians rejected the government offer of food as demeaning and a soup kitchen.
The difficulty of the negotiations was illustrated by an incident yesterday. Attorneys representing the American Indian movement tried to go through a roadblock to visit the insurgents in Wounded Knee. The Indians at the roadblock represent the established tribal leadership, and they refuse to let them through.
We also have some medical supplies.
No medical supplies.
The order says we can bring in medical supplies.
The attorneys were carrying medicine in their car, and the Indians began unloading. Several U.S. Marshals arrived, and the attorneys asked them to enforce a court order permitting the lawyers to go through.
Yeah, you got to put the medical supplies in, and the attorneys are allowed to go in.
Could you serve him with an order? We'd like you to...
No, we don't need to do that. I'll take care of him.
Well, I'm not taking it back. I gave it to you to serve under the order.
Well, you don't tell me what to do.
No, I'm not telling you what to do. You don't have to serve if you don't want to. That's your responsibility.
Why don't you shut your mouth and let me take care of it?
No, we're just asking you to serve. This is a matter for the record.
Where's their car? Is this their car?
This is our car right here.
Okay, get in it. Let's go.
The medical supplies have already been taken out.
Okay, I'll get the medical supplies. You just need one people. Just one person will do the talking. That's me. Get in the car.
The confrontation at the roadblock was the whole Wounded Knee dispute in a nutshell. On the one side, you have the American Indian movement. On the other side, the tribal council. And somewhere in between, trying to keep the two sides apart, the federal government. The government, of course, is also a party to the dispute. It's a very complex situation, and it's further complicated by the fact that it's been going on for a month, nobody's had much sleep, and everybody is pretty frustrated. Any negotiations are going to be a long and difficult process. John Dancy, NBC News, on the road to Wounded Knee. Senate sources said today that James McCord testified that he talked almost every day last spring to former Attorney General John Mitchell. But Mitchell has sworn he met McCord only once. McCord reportedly said he and Mitchell discussed Republican campaign security, but didn't say whether they talked about the Watergate bugging. The White House today denied a press report that President Nixon has given up hope that L. Patrick Gray will be confirmed as FBI director. The report said Assistant Attorney General Henry Peterson would be nominated instead. In San Diego, California today, former world heavyweight champion Muhammad Ali lost a split decision to Ken Norton in a 12-round fight. The circus is in New York. At a performance today, an acrobat fell off a high wire platform and he fell right into the middle of a lion cage. He was rescued by the lion tamer. He wasn't seriously hurt by the fall itself.
Men, this is it. You've passed the Exxon training school with flying colors. You're Exxon dealers now. You're the men with the answers. Jenkins, what's happened to cars?
They've changed, sir.
How have they changed? Broadhurst?
Emission control, sir. They can cause rough running due to uneven fuel distribution.
We call that hesitation. And what's that got to do with Exxon gasoline?
Exxon has HTA, an additive to help fight that kind of hesitation.
Now I want to congratulate whoever said that. Don't be modest. Who said HTA? Oh, no! Well, you've finally done it. I always said Exxon dealers are tigers, but I never knew a tiger could be an Exxon dealer.
Don't you know that Exxon keeps things moving right across the USA?
Most people think carefully before buying a new car. Some people right now are thinking very carefully about buying a car company, Rolls-Royce no less. The British firm is up for sale to the highest bidder, even though it's still making a profit, and of course those incomparable cars. George Montgomery reports on the British concern that some foreigners might buy Rolls-Royce.
Rolls-Royce has been making posh, pricey cars for about 70 years, so it has become a tradition. One more tradition that the British are bound and determined to hold on to, come what may. Rolls skidded into bankruptcy 2 years ago. As a result, Rolls-Royce Motors is now up for sale to the highest bidder. Bids must be in by May 1st. Some unidentified American and other foreign companies are interested in buying Rolls-Royce, its skills as well as its plants. For instance, expert workers build a lot of the $38,000 Corniche model by hand. A certain clever craftsmanship also has gone into the arrangements for selling the company. In line with Britain's desire to keep this British tradition British, a foreign buyer would not get the right to use the hallowed name Rolls-Royce. This is likely to discourage the foreign money. If the bankruptcy authorities decide the May bids are too low, a new Rolls-Royce stock issue could be floated to the public. This would please Rolls-Royce's managers. They think that under this setup, they would keep their jobs and make more money for Rolls than they could after being absorbed by a bigger company. Rolls is now showing a profit. A good many people are willing to bet their last hubcap that somehow or other, Rolls-Royce will remain as British as tea, the Queen, cricket, and soggy Brussels sprouts. George Montgomery, NBC News, London.
But then an American did buy the London Bridge and moved it to Arizona as a tourist attraction, so perhaps nothing is sacred. That's the news on this Saturday evening. I'm Garrick Utley. Good night for NBC News.